position number 2155801.
Alan Millery 1, where were you born, please?
In Hull.
Which year was this?
1913.
Did both your mother and father come from Hull?
No, my mother did, but my father was born in Beverley.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Hull?
Yes, I was. I went to the Newland Church of England school until I was 11. And then I went to the Hull Grammar School until I was 16.
At Leicester Street?
Yeah.
What was Hull Grammar School like in those days?
Well, I enjoyed it. It was... the whole pattern of it was very different from what it is now. But we had what seemed to me a fairly comprehensive curriculum. I started off in the third year, where we were asked to choose whether we would want German or Latin for our second language, French being the first. We had quite a decent gymnasium, a covered playground for outdoor activities on wet days. Two wooden huts that they said had to be added on for accommodation reasons. And physics lab, chemi lab, and a woodwork room. The school hall was in the original building, but then I think it would be in the late 1920s there was an additional six classroom unit built alongside between the school and Wellington Lane.
Did you have to pay in those days?
Well, I had to, because I did take the scholarship exam and passed it, but it was decided that my father's income was at such a level that I had to pay. I had to pay 3 guineas a term.
What was your father's job?
He was a transport superintendent for the Hull Corporation. In the city engineers department.
What do you remember about the head?
About
the head of the school.
Well, the first year was quite a character. It was called James 40, and he was quite a portly man and somewhat explosive on occasions. And he retired at the end of my first year there, and he was replaced by a younger chap called Freddie Mayer, who was, very strict, but very fair, and quite a scholar. I hadn't any serious personal encounters with him, but he gave me a good testimonial when I left.
What do you remember about the staff?
About?
The staff.
Oh, I remember one particularly. He was our form master for 2 years, a chap called Pete. R.C. Pete. He was an English master. He was a very nice chap, and he took an interest in quite a few of his pupils, and occasionally we would do coaching sessions with him because he had accommodation more or less on the school premises in Leicester Street. Got on with him very well. He was also interested in the sports side of the school.
What sports was he interested in?
I used to play soccer and cricket for the second teams, school second teams, and the under 14s.
And the rest of the staff?
Well, we had a French master who taught both French and German. He was called R.G. Catalan, and he was in fact a Swiss, and spoke both French and German fluently. He was a strict disciplinarian, and he had a habit of tweaking your ear if he thought you were not doing the right thing. And sometimes he would say, the fellow wants his hair pulled, eh? The other French master was an Englishman called McGreal. We had a geography teacher called Ellis, Beaky Ellis. He was a bit of a snob, actually. He used to look down on scholarship boys, which made him a little unpopular with some people.
What did he say about them?
Oh, I can't remember anything specific, but I just remember his attitude.
It was open, was it? It was open, was it? His attitude was open.
Oh, yes, yes. And he was quite a musician. He had a good baritone voice, and he was active in local musical circles as well. I can remember the woodwork teacher, although when you got to the fourth year, you dropped out of woodwork and concentrated more on your school certificate and matric subjects. Let me see. Oh, there was a chap called Colbert. I didn't come into contact with him a great deal, but he was renowned for having a very hasty temper, and he went off the rails at times. Under present conditions, he would have been severely disciplined, actually. But
what exactly did he do?
Well, he would hit people from time to time when he got into one of his rages.
With his hand?
Yeah.
On the head?
No, I don't think so. Although I wouldn't put that off. No, I won't say that. I didn't come into contact with him much, but he had a reputation.
What was Mr. McGreal like?
Oh, he was a very gentle, mild sort of man, and one whom everybody liked. And
was there a Mr. Page?
Huh?
Mr. Page?
Oh, yes. F.G. Page. Yes, he was... He used to take us out on cycle tours to local churches and things like that. I often went with him, and I quite enjoyed the time with him. He was good.
To study architecture?
Well, he used to talk about it to us. I never took it in deeply, although I'm still interested in a general sort of way.
What was discipline like in the school?
I would say it was good. And it didn't... It didn't tolerate any any serious misbehaviour.
What were academic standards like?
Oh, pretty good. We had a good record of people going on to Oxford, Cambridge. There was usually a letter from one of them in the school magazine. A pretty good proportion of success in the school certificate and what we used to call matriculation.
Which colleges in Oxford and Cambridge did they go to?
Oh, I can't remember.
What was the relationship with Hymers College and other local schools?
Oh, with Hymers, it was one of rivalry to some extent. Although Hymers was a rugby school, whereas grammar school was soccer. We used to play both soccer and cricket against Brid School and Scarborough High School.
Did you not play rugby at all?
No. They, funnily enough, the old grammarians had a quite a flourishing rugby team.
Was there a sense of pride in the history of the school?
Oh, yes, yes. In those days, it hadn't become unfashionable to be proud of anything like it is now. Nor was it unfashionable to be patriotic.
Did you stay on into the sixth form?
No. No, I think it was desirable from my parents' point of view that I went and started earning, but they were also very, very keen that I should get into a sort of job which had both security and a pension at the end of it. I started my employment, well, in the Hull Corporation, in a council in the Guildhall, with in the City Treasurer's Department, and I did study for the intermediate exam of the Institute of Municipal Treasurers and Accountants. But my heart wasn't really in it. I didn't like it at all. And when the formation of the Humber Division of the RNVR was announced in early 1939, I went along to join.
Where to?
Went to go to the Trinity House, yeah.
What happened then?
Well, we were... All applicants were given a medical test. And then... I can't remember the exact procedure, but in due course we were admitted, and I think about 160 of us initially, and out of those, there were two divisions of were called up at the end of August 1939, and we went to Chatham Barracks, and we were trained, selected for training, to comprise two guns crews, a control, no, what did they call it? Well, it was the nerve centre of the gunnery control, and then a director, a layer, and a range taker for the director. We didn't know it at the time, of course, but we were actually destined to go to the. To two of the C-class anti-aircraft cruisers, converted from the First World War, and I trained as a range taker.
What did that involve?
Oh, it involved a lot of practical work in the. On the range finder at Chatham Barracks and taking ranges of different local features under the supervision of petty officer instructors and the theory behind the construction of range finders and the maintenance of them. And I found it very interesting. I enjoyed it.
What was it like at Chatham?
Chaotic. when we were called up at the end of August, they were also bringing in R&R people and time served ones who were still on reserve for coming back into the Navy. So the place was completely swamped. And the accommodation was very crowded, to say the least of it. And to most of us, it was a bit primitive as well, because... I don't know, Chatham Barracks had been in existence for a long time without much in the way of updating. And after our initial fortnight's training, we were sent home on leave, I think for a week, I'm not sure. And then when we went back, they just didn't know what to do with us. And so some of our unit went into on sort of watchkeeping duties, guard duties on the Medway. A lot of us were employed filling sandbags. And we did a tremendous amount of polishing the wooden floor in the heavy gun battery, with occasional bouts of instruction in seamanship thrown in. You see, basically it was assumed that because we were RNVR, we'd already undergone a fair amount of seamanship training.
Had you?
No. Because we weren't formed, we weren't actively starting drills until I think it was May 1939. We didn't have a depot ship. After we'd been at a meeting at Trinity House for perhaps about 6 weeks, the Calcutta came into Albert Dock, and that was to be our depot training ship. It stayed there a fortnight, and then it was suddenly put into commission and left again, left in a hurry. And anybody, I think some of our officers had gear on board, and that was left on the quay side, and the ship departed. So we were back then to Trinity House until we were finally called up at I think it was the Tuesday before the war started. So it was a great relief to everybody when we finally got to know what ships we were going to. And there's one division went to the Curacao and the other to the Carlisle. I was the one who went to the Carlisle.
So. Can you tell me about going to Carlisle, please?
Oh yes, we had to join her at Devonport. And then we spent a short working up period in and out of Devonport. But then towards the end of January, it would be, we went out to Malta, based on Malta, and we did a lot of training with the radar, because Carlisle was equipped not just with the RDF, but also had the range finding capacity, and we did a lot of target shoots with towed targets, both seaborne and airborne, and coordination between the rangefinder ranges and the radar ranges. We had two London RNVR ratings on board who had some training with radar, and we also had two civilian scientists who had been involved in the development of radar. We spent about nearly 2 months in and out of Malta doing the practice shoots, subcaliber, and using aircraft towing drogues, and eventually we had some shooting practice at a Queen Bee. On the whole, the results were satisfactory and improved with practice, and it developed. Well, I think it developed a certain amount of confidence in the amongst the crew with the radar, both for its detection capacity and its range finding. It was it seemed to be quite accurate, and of course the main problem was the prediction, and of course radar helped quite a lot with that in estimating the speed of an approaching aircraft. But it was very much up to the control officer to get his angle of presentation right, because that was crucial in determining the decreasing range of anything that was coming our way.
Where was your action station?
In the director, as a range taker.
So where exactly in the ship is that?
Sure.
No, don't show me, because there's nothing visual in this.
No, of course not. Well, it was right at the top of the foremast. I mean, the foremast was a tripod, and the usual access was to go up ladders to the air defence position, and then a rope ladder, and finally a vertical steel ladder, and go through a hatch in the bottom of the director, and sort yourself out from there. It was quite a tricky journey if you're rolling a bit, because you got onto the vertical ladder, and the ladder was on the port side of the foremast. So if you rolled over to port, you were leaning backwards. Then you went over onto the starboard roll, and you nearly ran up the ladder because of the change in position. But you was to it in the end. We had a very pleasant control officer. He was a marine captain called Gordon Silas, and the layer was a friend of mine who joined with me from the Guildhall when he first joined the RNVR, and the trainer was another lad called Dennis Deaton, and we all got on very well together. It was, if we just did in three watches and nothing particular happening, it was quite a pleasant little club.
What were living conditions like in the ship?
Well, if we were in rough weather, they were very wet. When we first went out to Malta, we had a nasty crossing of the bay. In fact, we lost a marine overboard. And conditions in the mess decks were very, very bad indeed, and especially with a lot of people being victims of seasickness. Never been to sea before, most of us. But I was one of the more fortunate ones, I think. I felt the effects of it, but I was never unable to make my watchkeeping post, so, which did happen with some people. But fortunately, we weren't molested on the way across the bay.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, going into jib, when the sea had calmed down quite a lot, and it was all lit up. No blackout there at that time. And that's a memory that always sticks in my mind, and it was rather like going into Scarborough from the sea in peacetime. But and then we had a mill pond crossing from there to Malta. Can you shut off a minute?